Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 257. Premiering on the Nerdist channel on September 15th is a show that I'm super excited about called Nerd Turns. It's our actual interns from our Nerd Melt showroom, our little theater space at Meltdown Comics. These are the actual interns. We gave them some money. They wrote, directed, edited, produced everything. This kind of Larry Sanders-esque version of their lives as interns at Meltdown. And the show is fucking hilarious. And I love them all so much. So super fun show. Check it out. It's called Nerd Turns. And by the time you listen to this, it'll probably be up. That's over at youtube.com/Nerdist. I would like to thank Carbonite for being a sponsor of the Nerdist podcast. Online backup. It's automatic. It's secure. It's for your home or your small business computer. It doesn't matter what you're doing with the computer. It's going to back up your files. It doesn't judge you whether you're using it for home or your small business. Plans start at just $59 a year. And then you back up all your files. So you can actually access all of your files from anywhere. And then if something disastrous happens and your hard drive crashes or whatever, it doesn't matter. You can laugh in the face. You can pull your hard drive out of your units and then just laugh at it and then spit in its metal face and say, I don't need you because I saved everything to Carbonite, so suck it, hard drive. And then you should probably have issues where you go talk to a psychotherapist because you're yelling at inanimate objects. I did. So it's Carbonite. Go to carbonite.com. You're going to get 2 free bonus months with a purchase using the offer code Nerdist. Again, plans start at $59 a year. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. This episode is Michael Dorn. We've almost collected the entire cast of Star Trek The Next Generation. Dorn was great. Really wonderful guy. And he has a wonderful, mellifluous voice, which I'm sure you're aware of if you listen to this podcast. You've probably seen Star Trek The Next Generation. If not, I'm not judging you. Matt Myra would, but not me. Dorn has a Kickstarter going now. He wants to basically make a film called Through the Fire. So if you go to Kickstarter and look up Michael Dorn and or Through the Fire, there's still a couple of weeks, like 3 weeks left as of the release of this podcast, to raise their goal to produce this film that he wants to make with some of the other Star Trek actors. So go there after you listen to this podcast, or you could do it simultaneously because that's how audio podcasts work. So thanks for listening to Nerdist Podcast episode number 257 with Michael Dorn. Got to challenge this guy to bowling. We need to make a Star Trek. We need a next gen all-star bowling cast. Wheaton's in, LeVar Burton's in. I even think I can get Jerry Ryan in there for some sweet Trek crossover. I think we can make this happen. Go ahead and tweet Michael Dorn. It's at AKA Worf on Twitter. Let him know that Nerdist has dropped the bowling challenge. Damn. Nah, you just can't sound street or tough when you're talking about bowling.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
And then head on down there. What time are you going to pee-pee?
Pee-pee? Oh, fuck. Yesterday was, like, on the shoulder, like, strict press.
Mm-hmm.
Hurts. Doesn't seem like it should be helping.
Sounds great. I mean...
But it feels good.
Michael Dorn!
Hey!
How's it going?
Good, what's going on?
Hello!
Hey, good. How are you doing? Good to see you. How are you doing?
Good.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Chris.
Good,
Chris.
Nice to see you.
You bet.
Hi, I'm Jonah.
Jonah.
Nice to meet you.
My pleasure.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
And then we're pretty much recording.
Is this my pay for the day?
Yeah, you get a quarter.
There it is.
It's,
we only get a half penny.
I know, a half penny.
Actually, I have to cut old wheat pennies up into four pieces, yes. And they each get, it's a
close. We get two pieces. Chris gets one.
Yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah. Can't wait till we start getting bits.
Welcome to the...
Went well?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
I interviewed Michael and Marina on Attack of the Show.
Oh, I know.
A couple weeks ago.
Well, you interviewed Marina because...
Yeah. Well, she was closest and she talks a lot more than you do.
Did you Alpha 3-9 them?
No, I didn't. I didn't quite.
Matt is such a Star Trek The Next Generation fan that we came up with this game when LeVar was on called Alpha 3-9, which
is not a game. It's a thing that should have been on the Enterprise. It would have helped everybody out.
Still sounds like a game.
What is it?
If you hit your communicator and then you say Alpha 3-9, it will beam you out of awkward situations.
So
something's going weird.
So in Matt's personal, what happened with LeVar is that Matt would start kind of geeking out about Star Trek, and then at a certain point, it would be just too awkward for LeVar, and then someone would go Alpha 3-9, and that's the bailout point of like,
yes.
No more.
This is a safe word,
idea. Yeah, right?
Not a bad idea. They have the thing.
It's a safe word.
It's like a safe word, yeah.
Where they say some emergency beam up,
right?
You know, something,
yeah.
You know, but.
But yeah, this one just lets you know, it just brings you back to your quarters.
It should just be like you
back to your quarters.
Yeah.
You should just do it and you just go, oh boy. And it just takes
in. Oh boy.
Yeah. Or
wow.
It can tell when you're starting to stretch your collar out away from your neck.
I know. Heart's beating a little faster.
So these dumb mics, actually, you kind of have to be a little on them.
Okay.
Yeah, because then they look snazzier than they actually are.
Oh, okay, cool.
I apologize for
that's all right.
You deserve better technology than what we're giving you today, Michael
Dorn. Been,
the man
been,
flies jets.
I know. It's been 14, or excuse me, how long? It's been almost 20 years since we've been off the air, so... You know, we take what we can get these days.
Well, what you got is Matt Myra.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go.
Yeah,
enjoy
that's,
Michael.
That's good.
Over there. Thank you again for coming on. It's a pleasure to meet you. I'd been to the set a couple times
mm-hmm.
when you guys were shooting.
Next Generation,
uh-huh. Yeah. And I mean, I was just a snarky teen at the time, hanging out in Will's trailer.
Now you're a snarky adult.
Now I'm a snarky adult.
Not much has changed at all.
No,
exactly.
Same hairline,
yeah.
You asshole.
What? Stop. I don't know if that's true, actually. I don't know if that's 100% true. I look at old pictures. I feel like I see a little bit of a difference.
Yeah.
Do they stick together from the tears after you?
Yeah,
I know.
It's just I cry and then you apply.
It's hard to see what it says because you know the tears running the ink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh god.
So what's going on? How's everything? What's up?
Very interesting. I thought I was retired last year.
Really?
Yeah. I you know it had gotten to the point to where I was still working. You know, people were calling saying, "We'd love for you to do this and that," but you know, I just wasn't doing the auditioning and stuff like that I was before, and I went, "Cool, you know, great. You know, I'd rather play tennis and have lunch with my friends and travel and you know do all that type of stuff." And then at the beginning of the year, once again, it was like, "Great, you know." And then all of a sudden, I start working more than I've ever worked. I mean, it's just crazy. I did a play back for 2 months. Well, we rehearsed for a month and did it for Shakespeare As You Like It, my first Shakespeare.
Wow.
Which was amazing. And then I've been doing these movies, you know, that people have just been going, we'd love to get Michael Dorn. Is he available? And for some reason, these new agents I have and manager, they've just been going crazy.
They're ruining your good time.
They're ruining my good time.
Guys, you know, come on. I have a tennis match. I don't want to.
I know. It's like, you know what? I can't play this weekend. Oh, my
God. The worst.
The people that were my age that really grew up on Star Trek are now old enough to be making things. And they're like, get Michael Dorn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want to stay.
It's very interesting how that thing is sort of like happening now. Yeah. Because, you know, before when we started, we'd get the, I love your show. You know, I'm a big fan. And now we're getting, oh, you know, my dad was a big fan of the show, you know, and my mother made us watch, you know, and either they're big fans now themselves or else they just hate it, you know.
So. Well, I get that thing sometimes because I did a show in the 90s, and so I get now people go, oh, I watched your show. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And they go, well, I wasn't supposed to because I was in fourth grade and my parents wouldn't let me. And I'm like, this conversation's over.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
I don't want to hear about how you were in fourth grade and I was a grown-up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the worst ones are the ones, well, I wasn't born yet.
And you go, my friend was actually, he was on a date with a girl, and then he was talking about, like, oh, what kind of music do you like? She's like, oh, all kinds. He's like, well, do you like, you know, what do you like, heavy metal? She's like, well, no, not really. And he's like, well, you like probably Guns N' Roses. She's like, well, I've heard of them. Yeah. I've heard that name. Oh. He's like, but Appetite for Destruction was one of the biggest albums of that year. And then she's like, yeah, I don't know. What year did that come out? He's like, yeah, like 89. She's like, oh, see, I was born in 92.
No!
The date was then over.
Ouch.
Wow. Do you know that's dating a 20-year-old?
Oh. I don't want to say his name.
I think they call him Lucky. That's his nickname.
I think there's something interesting that happens. There's some sort of a weird. This is going to sound more new agey than I mean it to, but when you kind of release the need to, you know, oh, I got to work, I got to be doing it, and you kind of go, yeah, you know, I'm comfortable. Something weird happens.
Something weird
where
happens.
Where it just kind of like. Then it just comes.
But that's never going to happen for you.
Why?
That moment.
No.
You're never going to not work.
No.
You're always going to be like, I got to work.
Oh, my God.
Give me a job.
I have a freaking scythe in one hand and like a, you know, a Freddy Krueger glove in the other. And I'm just like, just fucking swinging as hard as I can
in
all directions.
The best way to get a job, a really good job, is to plan. And this happens to us all the time, is to plan a really fabulous vacation.
A once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime. I'm going to, you know, sail the Greek islands on a yacht with, you know, and you will get that job that you can't turn down.
Yep. Yep.
And it's happened to me like 5 times.
Yeah. And you don't get that deposit back.
No, you don't. And that's the thing. You can't fake it. No. You can't say, oh, well, I'll just pretend. You really have to be like on your way.
Oh, yeah.
And the last time it happened, I was supposed to go to Greece because Marina's brother lives in Greece, and he and I are very good friends, and I've been trying to get there for years. And I had this trip all planned, ready to go. And the day that I was leaving, the day I got a job that I couldn't turn down. It was like on Without a Trace, and it was a great role, and it was, you know, top of the show and all that stuff. And I went, and I called him. He says, you got a job, didn't you? And I said, yeah, I did, you know.
Well, and not to make you feel bad, but the money that you would have infused into the Greece's economy wasn't there.
Yeah.
You're kind of responsible for the collapse of their economy.
For that. Yes,
but
I know.
I hope it was a good show. Like, did you have fun working
on it? Yeah, it was great. It was in New York. I was there for like 2 weeks, and it was fantastic.
There's a lot of Greeks in New York. You could pretend.
I just imagined a chart at like some Greek parliament meeting where they're showing the economy, and they're like, this is our taxes are too low, and then there's a picture of Michael Dorn.
My brothers, once again, we have suffered from the Dorn effect.
And you know, let me tell you something, and they're really good at curses, too.
Yes.
They believe that stuff like crazy. So, you know, Marina's always talking about, oh, I put a curse on it. I'll put one of those Greek curses on it. You
know?
One of those Greek curses, yeah. So. But besides that, you know, it's been a fantastic year, you know. And then we started with this Kickstarter thing that we had talked about, where it was one of those things where somebody asked me about the Star Trek fans, like, how rabid are they? Do the Star Trek fans translate into real dollars, you know, like at the box office and all these things? And I said, sure, of course, you know, they had formulas and stuff like that. So we decided to see and put it to the test. And I love the, you know, technology these. Kickstarter is just fantastic, and all those kind of sites that are doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's great, because you can, people that wouldn't have the ability to do movies or
sure.
to do their TV shows or to do their records or, you know, or their little projects, you know, are getting the opportunity.
Kickstarter and Indiegogo and sites like that.
It's just amazing. So we went on there, and we're right in the midst of it right now. So, and we'll see what happens. The thing I love about it, the guys that I'm working with don't share my little pie in the sky enthusiasm, is that, you know, you really are going to find out. It really is one of those things where people ask you, and you can say, you know, emphatically, no, yes, you know, or it does work, or you need to do this, and it's sort of like one of those things where I'm just looking forward to seeing what the outcome is.
It's a science experiment.
It really is. See what it turns into. See if I can create a Frankenstein. You know?
Any predictions? Any predictions?
Interestingly enough, the predictions are pretty good.
Okay.
We've learned that there's a lot of Star Trek fans with a lot of money out there.
Sure.
Not with the $30 or the $20, but with the thousands of dollars. You
sure.
Know? So, so
well, it depends on what those rewards are. If it's like dinner with you, then they're going to shell out.
The dinner with me, there was a join us at a convention where you're, you know, our guest.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Star Trek Next Generation pinball machine.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
How much is that?
That's still in the box.
Don't tell him. Matt'll buy that.
But you have to put it together.
It's 2 seconds to put it together. It's like nothing.
Just put the legs on.
Just
ready
put the
to
legs
go.
On, plug it in.
What
it would be signed by all the. All
what's the going rate of the Star Trek pinball machine?
It's gone.
Oh, sorry, Matt.
That's
Myra.
What I'm saying. Is
you just, like, you just
that is one of the all time best pinball machines. Like just the way that game plays.
Yeah. I like
it's renowned.
I also like the classic Star Trek pinball with Kirk on the front of it. A friend of mine had one of those in his house, and it was really fun. Star Trek. I don't know. They really managed to. those shows somehow port really well over to a pinball machine missions.
There's actually a Kickstarter right now, speaking of the Star Trek Next Generation pinball machine, to put that on the iPad platform.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're trying to raise like $60,000 so they can get the Star Trek licenses so they can recreate that
I have a pinball game on my iPad. It is kind of confusing. Just because the entire screen moves along with the ball, so it's kind of hard to.
I think the way I've seen this one, it'll go for Xbox and PlayStation.
Oh, okay, yeah. Mine was a Slayer pinball game.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know what? I'll tell you what they should do is someone like ThinkGeek should basically make like a mini pinball machine that's a dock, and then you put your iPad up.
Oh, like how Atari has the little
mini
game console.
Exactly. And then you could play it that way. That's a good idea. Guys, why are we not making millions of dollars off this right now?
Because, you know, somebody someplace has that idea.
Yeah. Crap.
That's the thing. Is
it? Damn it.
Are you worried about the, like, almost like that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David, because of a contest, like, has to have lunch with a fan and just doesn't know what to talk to him about?
Not really. Our fans want to talk about Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they really want to know what it was like and, you know, behind the scenes and... Who was Marina, you know, who does she love on the show and who did Jonathan want to work with and things like that and what's coming up and they just want to interact.
That piercing in person?
Was what?
His eyes that piercing in person, Jonathan Frakes? I mean, they look...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny...
Especially in HD.
Yeah, oh, God. And Johnny was, when we basically kind of started out the same time and everything like that, and we had the male model roles. When we were growing up. And so he had the eyes, you know, and he was a hot-looking guy, and he had all those bad boyfriend roles and things like that. I had the good boyfriend roles where I never got lucky. And he was the one where he ripped people off, you know, and it was great. But no, he was piercing blue. Marina's eyes are huge.
Yep.
Couldn't really see LeVar's eyes, which was always a little creepy to me. But you know,
he was silently judging everyone behind the visor.
Totally.
Do you think he ever slept on the set? No one noticed.
Yes, he did.
Did he really?
Patrick Stewart on the podcast told the story about how he fell asleep during a scene where LeVar fell asleep during a scene and they basically just did the scene around him because he fell asleep behind the visor.
And Patrick fell asleep in his chair.
He mentioned that. He said it was like a close-up and he passed out.
And they were lighting or something and he just... which is always my favorite, you know.
I want to find out the decision. Is there any backstory, like with Frakes, when the beard decision happened?
Well, the second season, but I don't know why it happened.
Was that a him decision, or was that a?
I think it was a him decision. I think Johnny wanted to kind of separate himself from. And or maybe he just didn't want to shave anymore. but actually, you know, you got a beard. It's more trouble than you know. But I think that was a him decision.
Dorn's got the forehead. I need a beard.
I need something.
I can't do an appliance. I need to grow an appliance.
I had a beard too. So maybe he said, you know, well, maybe Riker needs it. But at the time, what I heard was Riker was almost too good. he was almost too much of a good guy.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted to give him some kind of little edge to him.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes him look like a pirate, you know?
I guess it does. They could have made him a klepto. I would have loved to have seen...
kind of look like the Cokehead from Die Hard.
Yeah. Hey, Hans. Hey, exactly. Picard, hang on a sec. I can handle this. Yeah.
Hey, man, this is radio. It's not real.
Listen, Ferengi, you got something you want? I got something I want. Blam!
And he does. The from your Kickstarter video, though, one of the things I found fascinating was that you were on the set of Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes.
What? Hey,
the
what?
Last two seasons.
Doing what?
I went there. One of my best friends in high school, his dad was assistant director on the show. And I wanted to get in the business to be a director. And they said, hey, come. They were very sweet about this thing. I really like these guys. And they said, come, you can hang out with us. You can shadow our directors. You can be a PA and all this type of stuff and see what it's like. And, you know, especially on that show, I mean, it was like a well-oiled machine. And it was just funny. And the actors were great. And it was just ran like clockwork. And so I really got a good taste of it. And then they said, look, you know, if you want to make some extra money, why don't you work as an extra one day a week.
Whoa.
You know, in the newsroom. And I was like, you know, I'm 25 or something. Sure, you know. and so I was there. In fact, in the last 2 years of the show, if you look back there, you won't recognize me because I got a big afro.
And a mustache?
And a glasses.
I loved the afro mustache combo.
It was big. In fact, I shaved it off because my acting coach that I went – what happened is I went back to acting school after I discovered I really loved it. And he said, Michael, you've got to shave off that mustache. And I went, what are you talking about? I love my mustache. He says, that's the problem, because every time you walk into a set, you're like, hi. I'm Michael Dorn. And this is my mustache.
That's a book title. Oh, why is that not your book?
It was. It was like, I just, you know, and I could see myself in a lot of shows where I'm talking and I'm like the Tom Selleck, black Tom Selleck, you know? And when I shaved it off, I felt naked. I was like, oh my God, they can see me, you know? But it made my auditions and my acting stuff like go through the roof.
I don't know who this uninteresting mustacheless fellow is, but he's got something.
He's got something. You know?
What was the Mary Tyler? I mean, like, any good Ted Knight coke stories? Come on.
Those guys, no. Those guys were no drugs. There was no nothing. There was nothing like that.
I heard the set of Caddyshack was like a ski slope.
Well, that was probably Chevy Chase's.
But not Ted.
Not Ted. Okay, that's good to know. No.
I mean, those guys, I just learned a lot about comedy. I mean, if you look at sitcoms, I don't know if you guys have been on a sitcom stage these days. But there is the actors, and then there's this horde of people, producers and agents and things like that are on the floor too. And they do one bit, and then they have to huddle, and then they change it. And they change it again, and they do it like, you know, four or five times, where these guys, they wrote it, they did it, and occasionally some guy would say, you know, do this again, and it would be even funnier. But it wasn't this thing of rewriting 10 and 15 and 20 times and, oh, that person. It just isn't the same thing. But it was fabulous. But they were great. There was no drugs. They were all just funny.
This is providing a lot of material for my Next Generation Mary Tyler Moore mashup that I had been planning for years. Please, Jean-Luc, Jean-Luc.
What is Mr. Grant? Oh, God.
What a great... When I was in college, I got to hang out on the set of Newhart a lot when I was, you know, like 19 years old. And it really... What's funny about that?
Weird statement.
Why?
When I was in college, I got to hang out on the set of Newhart.
I did. But it was the same kind of experience where when you're around people of that caliber regularly, it's so inspiring, and you realize how little you know and how much you want to be in that world. And it's such a small little world of, you know, it's like...
My problem is that I'm getting away from it, is that I go to sets now, and it's just one of those things where you go, yeah, it's not like Mary Tyler Moore.
It's never going to be. That was one of the rarest experiences.
I think it could. I think you actually could. But the system is built so against that these days, because If you look at any studio or anything like that, they have hundreds and hundreds of administration buildings.
Sure.
To put people in, you know, that you got 15 producers on a show and 20 producers. And I worked with this actor, actress one time, and she said she worked on a set where, actually a pilot for a series, and there were, I think, 6 actors and 20 producers. And you're going, okay, something is wrong here.
Yeah.
Something really doesn't work here. And if somebody had the guts to do it, you could do it. If somebody had the guts just to go, you know, we have, and if you look in the old days, when I was growing up, you little young whippersnappers, you'd see a producer, an associate producer, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, on every show, if it was a big show or small show, that's all you'd see.
Well, that's what you're seeing on smaller cable channels that are producing amazing shows like, you know, FX or AMC or IFC.
Yeah.
Or I mean, that's why I think a lot of people are drawn to web content, because there's just no, I mean, and a lot of veteran television people are like, fuck this. I'm going to go work. I'm going to create stuff on the web. I can just make it whatever I want. No one gets in the way.
Yeah. And I think it, with me also, is that it comes down to the point to where that's more important than actual the big money part of it.
Sure.
You know, that's, and in fact, when I was talking about, you know, doing this movie, everybody would say, well, Michael, you need to get an actor who has the foreign, you know, cachet, and you need to get this, and you need to get that. And they were doing me all this stuff, you know. And it just became an idea where it gets away from what the show's about or what the movie's about. And I said, no, I just want to make a movie. You know, I just want to make a little movie. If it doesn't make any money, that's great. You know, look at what's that movie? John Carter?
John Carter, yeah.
In the movie, I don't know, $200 million, and it made 50 cents. You know? In fact, I think this is...
That's half of their budget right there. I mean, that's half of the...
Half of the, yeah. And in the end, that's all you're going to have. And you can't tell if it's going to be a hit or anything like that. All it is that you make it a movie. It's going to be great. You love working with the people you work with, and in the end, you just have a film in a can, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
And but if it takes off, if it does really well, great. You know, but there's no like formula for it, and they always want you to follow the formula because that is their way of justifying their job.
Sure.
Just like in what is that, Blazing Saddles?
Blazing Saddles. Yeah.
Where he says, gentlemen, we gotta justify our phony baloney jobs.
That's the entertainment business.
Harumph.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a weird question. Are you a vegetarian?
Vegan.
You're vegan. Gosh, I knew there was something, because you look amazing.
Thanks.
I mean, like, truly fantastic.
Thanks.
And I find that people that I know that are in their 50s that look amazing tend to be vegetarians or some type of health conscious.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, which also bums me out because that means there's really something to it, and I just enjoy meat a lot, and that's a bummer.
I know. Yeah, I became a vegan. I was headed towards vegetarianism a while ago, but I became a vegan 4 years ago, and it's been great. It's been fantastic.
Damn
you
it.
Like that almond milk?
I love almond
it's
milk.
It's so good. It's so much better than soy or rice.
Better than soy rice, and you can get the vanilla almond milk, which is a little nicer, a little creamier and thicker, and it's just, I just go crazy for it.
Yeah.
I just go crazy.
I'm surprised there's not more places in coffee shops that let you use that as a substitute.
You know, people don't like being vegans and healthy stuff. They really don't.
You can find soy everywhere.
Yeah, soy is one thing because it's one kind of a fad.
Yeah.
You know, it started a long time ago.
It's not even that good for you.
Yeah, no, because it does estrogen. It turns into estrogen, and men don't need estrogen, you know?
How else am I supposed to grow a vagina?
Well, there's
in your
other
lab,
ways.
Chris.
There's
what?
Other in ways. Your lab. Keep it there.
Back to the lab.
In my lab.
Did you see the documentary Forks Over Knives?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's a really good documentary about just it's vegan whole foods diet.
And protein. Everybody... in fact, my girlfriend said she's a vegan now, and she's even more than I am. And every time she says it, they say, well, where do you get your protein? You need protein. That's the building blocks. And you don't need protein, really.
Yeah.
That's what this whole thing is about. You know, there's some protein, but you don't need, you know, meat, and it's got to be coming out of your teeth and stuff like that. So it's been great.
There's a really good part in the Forks Over Knives documentary, which is available streaming on Netflix, is... I think it's a thing.
Just the way you say it every time. It's like you get $5. Yeah.
I think it's,
make sure
I,
to
I
enter the code Jonah Ray.
I'm not vegetarian vegan, but it did make me kind of assess a lot of the stuff I was eating. And there was a kind of they talk about like an Asian style of eating where it's like, you know, when they have meat, it's like a little slice of meat that mm-hmm. they'll put in a broth for taste.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then you look at the serving sizes that people get in the States, and it's just like a boogie board size steak.
I know. It's just monster. I mean, yeah. In fact, all of the Star Trek fans, my friends on Star Trek, because it's the 25th anniversary, we spend a lot of time. We do the conventions together. And so we're all together, and we'll all have dinners whenever we go to these things. And these guys are drinkers, smokers, and meat eaters. And you're talking about, I'll have the side of pork, please, you know, and I'll have is that beef tender? Yeah, send it over.
Roll that in a cigar.
Oh, man. I know. And it's just, it's crazy to watch them, and I kind of go, okay,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they look around the table and go, I'll be at your funeral, yeah. Your funeral.
It's a bad long-term plan. It really is a bad long-term plan.
And then they go outside and they're, you know, smoke. Oh, it's just,
how do you do it? But just, you know, every once in a while, I go, yeah, but, you know, I wonder if I could be vegetarian just to see what it was
for
like.
Funsies.
Yeah, and then but my travel schedule is so, but you travel a lot,
yeah.
Right? So it's just, how do you get around that when you're on the road? And when you go to places in the country which have not really acclimated to that that type of...
Well, I just don't go to the Midwest.
Okay, okay, okay. Fair enough.
Because they look at you and you say, I'll have a salad. Would you like that fried, honey?
With the whole salad? Yeah,
no,
bowl and all.
No, just... you're going to need a slab of cheese on that, you know?
I don't know.
But, you know, most places you can do something. It's just... It's difficult. You're going to starve sometimes. Because I went up to and people will tell you, they'll say, oh, this place will do a great meal, Michael. They'll do a vegan meal. And you go there and it's really only lettuce and some rice,
right?
Yeah. Is all they have. So it is difficult. But if you go into the small cities, you just have to kind of make do.
Damn.
You know? I mean, if you're going to be in a place for a few months, That's something different.
Well, if you're working on a film, you could probably say to the production company,
oh, totally.
Here's my dietary needs if you're going to take me to Alaska to shoot for, you know,
totally.
Then I'm going to have to sort this out.
Even in town, I'm working on a movie now called Castlevania. And
it's based on the game?
Yes.
Oh, what?
What? Wow. How do we not
you didn't know
about this?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's awesome. Really cool.
We got the producers.
What a scoop.
I know. The producers will love it. I yeah.
And oh, my God.
I play Thane.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a Castlevania movie. That's red.
Yeah, we're filming it right now.
Classic
don't
PC
fire
game.
Up, Michael
Who's
Dorn.
Who's playing Simon?
You gotta look at the.
Yeah, I'll
send you the stuff. Yeah. But they were very good. They were, you know, even in town, they have, you know, when they have the caterers and all that type of stuff. And it's all the regular food that you see on sets. But they were said, oh, Michael, we can do whatever you want. We can go here. We can get that.
Real Food Daily?
Real Food Daily. They can, you know, they found an Earth Cafe near where we were filming, and they have almond milk, and they were very good. I mean, the other day I said, well, Michael, what do you want? I said, no, guys, no, it'd be too difficult for you. I said, what is that? I said, well, I like dried goji berries. And if you look at, there's a thing on YouTube, or if you go on the web, there's a whole... 3 or 4 segments about how goji berries do something to your blood. Like it just rejuvenates you like crazy. It's like the best superfood you can have.
Wow.
And I said, well, I'd like some dried goji berries. And we were like in Mount Washington off the Pasadena Freeway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nothing around there. And sure enough, in about half an hour, they came back with some. So they're very good with that stuff.
I could find you a place nearby there. I can find it.
Yeah, yeah. Really?
Yeah, yeah. I know that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right down the street in Echo Park, there's a, they got Sage.
Sage.
Which is a great vegan restaurant.
I love Sage.
You should really check it out. Yeah.
It's, and those vegan restaurants, you don't miss meat at all.
The best BLT I've ever had is from Cafe Gratitude. And it's,
and that's right.
That BLT is so good.
I love that BLT. But if you really want the meat experience without having the meat experience, Native Foods.
Okay.
In Westwood, and there's another one in Culver City. And It's all chicken.
It's all the mock stuff.
Oh, it's amazing.
Now, what is? Yeah. I'm trying to understand the psychology behind. Like, if you don't eat chicken, but you still just want to eat something that's mashed together to look like chicken.
It's not so much the look; it's just the
texture,
and the taste. I mean, like, you know, it's like the taste of chicken, the taste of meat is all great, and so there's no reason not to mimic it. You know. Mm-hmm.
And they do the. My favorite is they do the Reuben sandwich.
What?
Yes, and their Reuben sandwich is great.
Oh my God. It looks like a Reuben sandwich.
And it feels just as unhealthy.
Yeah.
That's the thing about sage is that like you're eating this stuff, you're like, this is all vegan, but I don't know if it's good for me still. It's still kinda
Well, you know, it is good for you, but it still is one of those things where even with native foods, you're gonna get the same effect.
Yeah,
but it still is good for you.
Yeah,
it's not dietary. That's the one thing about sage or native foods. It's not dietary. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go in here and lose weight.
Right.
No, like Real Foods Daily, same thing. They have nachos.
Yeah, they're nachos and they're tacos.
Still fattening.
Yeah,
still
very much so.
Alternatively, I like to take steaks and form them into vegetables, just to take the opposite.
You know, that's what we used to do. We used to make, you know, take little strips and make them into broccoli.
Exactly. I make chicken celery, which is really fun. Just like put the feathers on the end for
and
the
then
leaves.
You have a little pork juice.
Pork juice
on
is
the
great,
side.
Guys.
Yeah, a little shot.
I can feel my left ventricle slamming shut as we speak.
We shot a thing for our YouTube channel, which was basically a cooking show that is all about it for Walking Dead premiere. So it was what we like. They did the Walking Dead themed food, and they got this, you know, like these ribs and formed this rib cage around this this sausage in the middle, this chorizo, and then we sort of ate it with our hands and mouths and like that. I did not feel. I mean, the food was delicious, but I ate so much meat.
Yeah.
At one time that I just felt like my blood was toxic.
The one time, the longest break I ever took off of eating meat, and it was I think it was about 4 months. I didn't eat any meat, and it was after a week in Austin, Texas, for South by Southwest, where I was doing nothing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nothing but eating barbecue.
Hey, boy, you want some more barbecue?
Yeah,
you
know, it was that on top.
What are you, a terrorist?
And just and then on top of drinking, like I got home, I was just like, I don't feel well, and I just kind of just didn't eat meat for a few months. I felt great.
Well, we went up to Calgary for the first big reunion convention.
Yeah, right.
And we
Fan Expo.
We went to this restaurant, which was a steak restaurant. They said, "Oh, Michael, well, they can have something for you." They didn't, and they brought out appetizers and stuff like that. There was more meat than I've ever seen in my life, but it's different meat wrapped in around meat.
Yep.
It was like pork
like
wrapped around, you know, with bacon stuffed inside a steak. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was just, and they were just, yeah, this is, isn't this great, Mike? And I'm like,
God. Their eyes are yellow.
It was actually the first time that I actually didn't feel good.
Do you ever stand up and go, "You all disgust me," and you walk out? Okay,
you should.
No, I just look at them, and they know. They look at me, and you know, and they know that. But you can't. I mean, how can you not notice a guy that's? I've lost 40 pounds, right?
Wow.
And. You know, and I'm, you know, up here, my skin is great and all this type of stuff. And they're like, yeah, whatever, you know? I mean, you kind of.
That was a really good
notice.
Spiner impression.
But for you, it's all diet and health. It's not ethical for the animals.
It's
right
part
now.
Ethical.
Part ethical.
It's part ethical.
Yeah.
It's part ethical because, you know, it is really terrible what they do.
I mean,
it's really like beyond terrible. It's like
Food Inc.
Sadistic. Yeah.
Also streaming. That's another sadistic. Bad thing to watch.
$10 he made today.
Use the code Jonah Ray.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but there are things you should watch, you know? There are things
but the big thing
see.
Is that the stuff they put in it, you know, the hormones and the growth hormones and the preservatives and all that stuff is just, you know, just ridiculous.
And then the preparation, just the, like, you know, the feces just in the meat.
And what was that? They had one thing on cable. It was a four-part thing, and it was called...
Oh, The Weight of a Nation?
Weight of a Nation. And the chicken fingers that they make for the kids,
yeah,
that's not chicken.
Oh, what is it?
I don't know. It's something else.
Is it duck?
Seriously, no. It's
is it something duck?
Else. I'm just gonna guess other else. Yeah. Other
it's
fowl.
It's not chicken, and they're just feeding these kids and the kids and I love the parents going, I don't understand what's going on. My kid is huge, and they're huge.
Of course.
And they go, I don't get it.
Jeans, bad jeans, I guess.
Bad jeans, but. But it's choice, and I don't judge people about that stuff, and that's why I just keep my big yap shut when I.
What are some good online resources that you found that you order? I assume you order food online, like stuff online. Do you any good?
Sun Foods is very good.
Erewhon is a pretty good market here in LA.
I love Erewhon. Yeah. I live at Erewhon. There's another side to this is that it is expensive.
Expensive, which part of it kind of pisses me off because companies like Whole Foods and bigger companies go, hey, these health nuts will pay out the nose for this shit.
Man,
it sucks.
It's like you go there and you get a little bag of something and it's $150 and you go, whoa. And but Erewhon is excellent. I mean, they really have some good stuff, and you can find stuff in there that's not super expensive. But if you're really a hardcore vegan and smoothies and stuff like that, it can get up there.
Do you have an exercise regime?
Yes, I do. I do 4 days a week in the gym at 7:30.
Yep.
In fact, right now I'm doing this CrossFit.
Jonah's doing CrossFit.
My CrossFit, my trainer, she does CrossFit.
So she just gives you the wad?
She gives me the stuff. And you do, like today, you do you do the presses. You do 20 sit-ups. Let's see, 15 presses, 20 sit-ups, 15 hanging leg raises. Mm-hmm.
Yesterday I had to. Yeah.
And then a 3-minute run, and then and curls, like this, mm-hmm. 30 pounds, and you have to do that. You have to do four of those exercises, four sets of that within 20 minutes.
Interval training.
Yeah, that's yesterday. I had to do like kettlebell swings.
Yeah, where do you go?
I go to this place in Atwater Village.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's a newer place. When I checked out the website, it's called CrossFit Gambate, and the website's like, asking people, how's it helping you?
Use the promo code Jonah Ray.
Helping you here. And then one of the things was like, how's this class helping you prepare for the zombie apocalypse? And people were like, the endurance, pretty much.
Pretty much endurance. You got to be running.
You got to be careful with the kettlebell swing, though.
Yeah. I'd be careful with all
No, but particularly the kettlebell swing, because you're using momentum on your body, and if you're not, it's dangerous for your back. Yeah. If you're not,
the most
pain
I've ever been in was after doing a half hour kettlebell workout.
I think for two
days I was just.
It
out
was
of
sort of one of those
it's
things
more about, like from your hips and.
It's one of those things that got really trendy for a while. People ordered the stuff at home. You got to be really careful. You could seriously fuck your back up doing that.
I went online. There was like compilations of guys that just knocking their teeth out.
If you're not doing it, if you're not doing it right, yeah.
But I do that 4 days a week, and then I play tennis. I'm a big tennis player. I play at, let's see, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's 9 days a week. He's exercising. This is amazing.
Yeah, I'm trying to do 4 days.
I swear I'm trying to.
You know what I see
how
for you,
often,
Michael? Ask your question, and then I'm gonna. No, because
I was just gonna ask how often he flies.
Oh, I hadn't flown a lot in the last 6 months, but I just got a new airplane.
Oh,
I'm supposed to be ready this week. Although I'm going to be gone to Atlanta for DragonCon.
I'll be there.
Yes.
Nice.
But I start next week, and I usually go once a week.
Yeah.
I usually fly someplace once a week.
I was watching Modern Marvels one day on jets. This guy pops up talking about jets.
So you fly jets.
I used to own a couple of ex-military jets.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
I had a T-33.
And
then I had an F-86.
Oh. Where can you fly those? Like, if you need to go somewhere, do you fly those, or do you just kind of go up and fly around?
No, I used to travel with them. I went cross-country a couple of times.
In one day?
This airplane it's much faster than a commercial jet, the F-86, and so I would but you land twice, which is still the best part. But I flew to Florida and I twice, and then I sold that and got a corporate jet, And I flew that for about 4 years, and that was cool. Going back east, you know, to New York and Washington.
You get to bring your friends along. And...
Yeah,
but they don't really get to hang out with you because you're flying the.
Yeah, well, you know, but in the corporate jet, you have to have a co-pilot. It's FAA rule.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's flying. You can go back and you know and have lunch with him, you know, and then go back and land.
Drink all the booze. Yeah. And then
That's what the Sklars were saying when they had to go do reshoots for a movie they were in with John Travolta. It's like you know they're like, oh, we'll just take his plane. So he flies it up, and then like the co-pilot takes over, and then they all just hang out for a while, and then he goes back in, lands it. He says those are the parts he likes.
Yeah.
And those are the parts that take skill.
That's the most exciting because those airplanes, you know, the corporate jets, you just program it and you just fly for 2 hours with your arms crossed.
Wow.
But this one I got now is a twin engine Cessna that I used to own, not this particular one, but the same style that I used to own a long time ago. And it's just to kind of keep my thing in flying. Yeah. See, right now, my goal is to work to buy another airplane. And I want to get an F-5 nice. Freedom Fighter is what they call it. And it's a jet that trained a lot of pilots. But it's a twin engine and it goes Mach 1. And so I'm looking for that next series, you know, or that next job.
Star Trek, the next generation, D-Space Nellon.
Kickstarter, come on. Buy Michael Dorn an airplane.
What's a jet?
I want an airplane.
How big of a Star Trek fan are you, really?
Yeah. How much do you love me?
Wouldn't you like me a little better in an F-5?
I know.
Was that right, F-5? I said that right?
F-5 okay,
I thought that was a tornado ranking.
Nah.
An F-5, right?
Yes.
Don't we have one? Yeah. We have one on the East Coast now.
F-5 is a tornado ranking. Yeah, you're
okay.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, good. Good. I have to make sure I still remember Twister.
That's a bad one.
The finger of God.
That's like death.
But if you have a belt and a pole in the ground, you're going to be okay.
Did you guys see there was a documentary about tsunamis, about the tsunami that hit.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was just crazy, you know? How people were like standing there going, wow, those are some big waves, you know, and they're standing there, and all of a sudden, nothing's left.
Yeah,
yeah, that was crazy because I grew up in Hawaii, and there was always the story of what happened when a tsunami hit Hilo Beach on the Big Island, and it's just like you know, everyone wakes up and there's just no water at the beach, and they're like, "What? This is crazy!" So the entire town just goes down
to the
and
beach.
Just starts like they're walking up, and you know,
and then the wave,
yeah. But the wave just doesn't look like much; just looks like a swell. You know, they're used to swells, you know, but it's just the fact that it's, you know, it's a mile wide and or like you know, a mile deep, and it just crushes in, and so it was neat. It was so crazy seeing that. Because you only hear the stories, and there's a picture of it maybe in like the Hawaiian history books, because it was just such a devastating thing that happened to the state, and just to see it actually when the Indonesian
and the thing is that you know you would think that people would go, holy shit, this is not good, you know, if the water goes out, it's got to come back in at some point, you know. You would think they'd go, let's get out of here, but everybody was like going, wow, you know,
what a tide,
it was crazy.
What a tide it's been.
Yeah, that footage is crazy because you just see the people watching it come in, and then just kind of slowly, it's not stopping, and then too late.
So what? The Cessna is twin engine.
Yes,
it's a prop plane.
Prop airplane, yeah.
How far can you take a Cessna?
800 miles.
Just 800 miles before you got to refuel?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's you're kind of pushing it. And it's not so much that it's as dangerous. It's just that, you know, your butt starts aching after about 2 or 3 hours. You know? So that to me is like 2 hours is like the most for me. And I'll do that.
I assume you were a pilot when you were shooting Star Trek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever come in on the bridge and be like, guys, that's not how you...
No, you fly.
Right. Well, it's cute, but that's
not how you fly in space.
The one time that happened was I did a show called a movie called Mach 1 with Brian Bosworth, right? The Boz.
Yep.
And it was funny. I don't know if they lied to me or if it was but they told me it was supposed to be not another Bosworth.
Tom Bosworth?
No,
that's Tom Bosley.
No, Tom Bosley.
Brian Bosworth. And,
Kate Bosworth is the only other Bosworth.
There's another actor. Anyway, but they said it was going to be this guy. In fact, he did Spin City.
Brian Bosworth.
Brian.
Yeah.
No, Brian Bosworth was this.
Isn't he Boswick?
Barry Boswick.
Boswick.
That's from Spin City.
They said Barry Boswick, and I went, cool, you know? And the wardrobe lady came over and she says, oh, yeah, Brian's going to, what? Said, yeah, Brian Bosworth. I went, what is he doing?
Oh, you find out in wardrobe. That's
right. And that's right. And they were supposed to be flying a Concorde. And a Concorde is this little cockpit. I mean, it's really tight. And they had this thing on stage, and it was this huge, like an L-1011 or ZZ-10 cockpit. And they said, hey, Michael, doesn't this look just like the Concorde? I went, no, I'm sorry. It doesn't
look like Barry Bostwick.
And that's not Barry Bostwick. Doesn't act like Barry Bostwick either. I'll tell this story. We did this one scene, and my cousin, his daughter was down from San Francisco, and at that point she was probably 13 or something like that. And she came down to visit and stayed with me with her friends, and she came to the set. And after doing a scene with him, we were driving back, you know, and she goes, he's not very good, is he? And I went, oh boy.
Are you talking about Academy Award winner Brian Bosworth?
No, those words have never been spoken.
But anyway, that was
by him in the mirror, sure.
I don't even think so. I even think he was like, all right, come on, I know what this goes.
But I had a great time because of Star Trek. They it's a small community. The fighter pilot community is a small community, and they knew that I flew. So I flew with the Blue Angels, then I flew with the Thunderbirds.
Oh wow!
And I went on an aircraft carrier and an F-18 Hornet, and did carrier operations with them, you know, flying, doing cat shots in this thing, and it was just amazing. I mean, I had a huge military career.
Man.
Yeah, so it was great.
Then any of the military guys go, wow, it's really amazing that you're on Star Trek. I don't think I could do that. You're like, you land a plane on a boat.
Yeah, totally, totally. I've got that a lot. They say, oh my God, I couldn't be an actor. I'm like, are you kidding? People are shooting at you.
That's fine, but to pretend to be someone
different.
Else.
That's different, what you
do. But if they're shooting me with a camera, I can't do anything.
I didn't get to that. Only with guns, I can handle guns.
I freeze, you know? I can't believe it.
These pilots sound like idiots.
No, I don't know why we turned them. So we turn them into Bowery Boys.
I don't know how you do it. You're crazy.
I know. All of a sudden, I know.
Hey,
what you do? I can't believe it.
I'm a colonel in the Navy.
Yeah, but it was amazing. I've gotten to do some crazy stuff.
I feel like I'm having an idea that I think would be really great to see you be able to do.
What's that?
I would love to see your take on like a Sherlock. You like a Sherlock Holmes.
Oh my God!
Michael Dorn, Sherlock Holmes are like a house.
Mm-hmm.
I like this idea.
You do?
I do.
Put it out there.
I'll put it out in the world.
There you go.
And then kickstart it.
And you know what? You know what we do? And then we plan a fabulous vacation someplace.
And then yes.
And then they'll be calling us. Hey, that idea you had, you can't go. We want to do it now. You know?
A really studious, super smart guy who just figures out. Things
I know figures out.
He just figures out stuff.
It's just no shit.
Or like, cause you got a really nice buttery voice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it commands attention.
Puts people to sleep at times.
No, did you ever work in radio?
Very, very shortly when I first started, because it was one of those things where you're just doing anything you can. And I started but you know it wasn't for me.
Did they ever have you read one of the Star Trek audio books?
Yes, I did. I read that, and I read another book, which was Heart of Darkness by Conrad, and it was such a dark and ugly book, and it was like 3 days. It was just terrible.
You're
it was
listening
really hard
to
work.
WORF. WORF.
What? Come on. What's wrong with that?
Even I wouldn't say that.
That is a quality joke, Matt.
That's a quality. Yeah.
I think I saw that in a Mad magazine.
See, it sounds amazing when he says it.
No.
What does WORF play?
Opera, obviously.
No, R&B. R&B.
Klingon R&B.
Klingon R&B. James Brown.
Known for their bass lines.
I feel warlike. I knew that I would like. What? That's not.
No.
No?
Not even a.
He's not even. Can't even go with that.
Yeah.
You're not going to yes and that?
Nope.
He's really you're really bringing out the OCD and Mads grabbing his ear.
Nope.
It's not. It's not.
He's pulling out eyebrows.
It's not right what you're doing.
This is not. You're desecrating the.
James Brown and Star Trek at the same time.
What are you talking about?
NBC.
I had an idea on the show that Worf just, he just loved R&B for some reason. He heard it from one of the historical tapes, and he just fell in love with it, you know. But they thought it was cuter for me to like opera, that he just loved Klingon opera.
Well, also, they don't have to clear that.
Yeah, totally.
I guess that's true. Then they don't have to write write R&B. And Rick Berman doesn't have to write an R&B song.
Yeah, well.
But I feel like that makes a lot of sense for me with that character, because it's so out of the realm of everything else that his life is about.
It would have made more sense if he liked Russian opera. That would have been cooler, I think. His parents were Russian.
Oh, the thing is that, but they had a Russian before. That's the only thing from the original. Yeah. They didn't want to go back to that. The parent thing was cool, but they didn't want to go back to that.
It is interesting how the show. I mean, like when you think about the product of the original Star Trek of its time, you know, it's just the idea of like, hey, there's a Russian guy, and that like just during the Cold War, and Gene, you know, like just had the foresight to be like, no, this is a period of time where you know, Earth. We've figured out those problems, and now we're going out to...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
Well, Next Gen's a product of the 80s, having a shrink on the bridge.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, and you know what? It being so, you know, kind of a cool set, you know, it's not militaristic. It's like your living room, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing that I, when I first walked on the set, is that I got is this feeling of, ooh, this is nice. I could live here. Because it was just like somebody's living room. You know, and I think that's what, you know, they wanted to. Gene was always good about that, you know, about thinking, okay, let's think beyond that. You know, that's a good idea, but let's go beyond that. You know, what would it be like if it was, you know, 50 years from now? Like everything now. I mean, you know, if you look at technology 50 years from now, you know, or now, you know, 50 years from now, who knows what it's going to be, you know? So things have to progress, have to.
Yeah, now I laugh at the, like, when you watch old episodes and Picard's got piles of pads on his desk. It's just like, that's his busy work. He's got a ton of iPads.
Yeah. Each iPad has its own. Yeah,
yeah they are. IPads. They absolutely are.
And I never really thought about that until this second, but that's what they are, because they're like this and boop, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop.
Yeah.
I mean, the other day I was doing this thing because there's a I don't have a iPhone, but I have the Motorola, and there's a Siri type, you know, app for that. And, you know, it talks to you, does the whole thing, and it'll answer your text messages and tell you what they are and text the person back. And so I was in a room and the thing was way over there and it says, you have a new text message. Would you like to listen to it? And I'm way out. Yes. Reads a text message. Would you like to respond? Yes. What would you like to say? Well, say da 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 da. I'll send it right now. Boom, and it's gone. And I just—that's
great.
I just sat there like.
But you have to trust the dictation. You have to trust the dictation software too, so it doesn't say something. Yes,
but it'll.
But it's still.
It tells you what
it's gonna what it said.
What
you know?
It says.
Oh, yeah. It does. It repeats it back to you.
Yeah, and it's just like you go, huh? You know, I mean, I remember push button phones when they first came out. You know, and it's like. It's crazy.
The ones without a touch tone,
Yeah.
Because it was still doing the rotary.
Yeah, but it would hit the button and it would.
I mean, just to tell you how old I am, we went to Disneyland one year, and won't tell you what year it was. And we went into Tomorrowland, and there they in this one section they had touch tone phones, and we were like, holy shit! What I'm talking on a touchtone phone.
Just poked the buttons as opposed to swiping them in a circular motion.
In a circular manner.
What's
you know?
Weird is that those phones are still in Tomorrowland. They still have touchtone pay phones. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, Tomorrowland didn't really catch up to.
They sort of marketed it as a sort of
retro,
the retro view
now
of the
it's
future.
Retro. Oh,
the retro
or
view.
We don't have
the
money to put
today
into Tomorrowland.
Let me tell you,
they do.
My mother has a portable phone, and she has her dial phone still on the wall.
Wow. Oh wow!
Yes, and I just go there, and I don't mind so much. I just go. It's somehow just reassuring. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it's funny. My friends have a landline, and I was hanging out at their place, and the phone rang, and Kate, the girl who lived there, like answered it. She's like, "Hello? Oh, hold on. Rob, someone's on the phone for you. I was like, well, why didn't they just call his phone? Why did they call the place that they don't know he might be at? It was confusing. You have a direct line to anybody.
People are not location-based anymore.
Yeah,
I know.
I kind of like that. I mean, Scott Mosher, he's still got a landline because he's got no cell service up in the... And I call
And that's a funny thing. Nobody has landlines, and I have a landline. Like I said, I just want to make sure... You know, like you said, if ever zombies take over, you want to have a landline because they, you know, they'll look at it and go, what's this, you know?
Your best bet is to go to your airplane and use the radio.
The hell out of here.
That's and then fly over it.
Yeah, and just keep going.
Oh, man. That'd be so awesome. Mm-hmm. I always thought it would be fun to learn how to fly a plane, but...
Do it. You're not too old.
Yeah. Really wasn't that concern, Matt.
Your eyesight's holding up okay. I mean,
you're doing all right.
Who
right?
said that?
Who's that? Who said that?
Who is that over there?
Where's my blanket?
Goddamn kids.
Good darn fool kids.
I thought you might have been worried about being too old.
No, you know what? You know what? It's one of those things, if you ever want to try it, there's every place, every airport has a little flight school, and they'll take you up just for an introductory flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, $30 or something like that, and just see if you like it, because you may go... Nah, you know, and then a lot of people, they just go, oh, God, I want
to. I feel like I want to pay more than $30 to be.
Well, you know, it's their hook to get you in there.
Okay, good.
Because once, and most of the time, like 90% of the time when people take that introductory flight, they come back. They say at least they'll sign up for a number of lessons.
It's like getting those 11 CDs for a penny.
Oh yeah, so
then you're in
Columbia House,
$22
a CD. Pennies?
Yep, tapes. You get you can get any 10 tapes that you want.
I don't even know what that is.
I picked Supertramp's Breakfast in America,
and then 9 more of those
tapes. You mean what kind of tapes?
Audio cassette.
Like audio cassette.
Madonna's Like a Virgin was another one that I picked up.
The Immaculate Collection.
No.
Oh, callback. Cassette tapes. Oh God.
Cassingles.
Cassingles.
Cassingles. Oh. Those were the days. Yes, they were. Tracks. I remember all that stuff. It's
you need to load an 8-track into the Cessna and just bring your little suitcase full of 8-track tapes and just like.
Oh God! Well, now the whole even technology with the airplanes has just gone ridiculous, because when I started, they had round dials and they had a couple of little kind of cool things that you know could point you generally
analogy stuff,
and now. Like with there's a new airplane called a Cirrus, which is, in fact, Angelina Jolie flies a Cirrus. But it's flat panels. And one guy says, like flying a laptop. And it has so much information in this single engine airplane that is just crazy. It doesn't fly high, it doesn't go fast, but you know everything about everything.
But what if that goes down?
Then you have to fly.
Then you have to fly with the instrument.
Then you have to look outside.
Does she actually fly? Does she actually have her pilot's license?
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
She's I didn't know that.
For years.
What?
For years and years and years, yeah.
Did you guys meet at the pilot's club?
No, we didn't. No, we're all separate. I mean, I wish there was an actor's pilot club.
You could be like, hey, Angelina Jolie, it's a pretty cute single-engine plane. Here's my
F5. Here's my
F5. Is that what Craig Ferguson said he does now? Just every time he has a free moment, he just goes flying?
Yeah, probably.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Him and Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Travolta, Cruz, what's his name? Harrison Ford, big pilot.
He flies helicopters, right?
He flies everything.
Yeah.
He flies everything. And Morgan Freeman. Except really kind of sad about Morgan. He got in a car accident.
Yeah,
he
hand.
Screwed up his arm, so he can't fly anymore.
No!
I didn't know he actually got hurt.
He got hurt pretty bad.
Yeah, that's why he wears that glove all the time.
Yeah.
For circulation.
Jeez.
But you know, yeah, so it's, you know, if I were you, I'd just take an introductory flight. You may hate it. You may just go, I don't want to do that. But the technology is like, in fact, I was getting my training in this airplane because I just really wanted to see what it was like. And I'm flying around and the instructor is going, okay, now if you look over here on this panel, you can see the airport off in that direction. And I went, well, if you look over there, I can see it just
with my
right
eyes.
There.
Yeah, but that's not cool and robot-y.
It's not cool. You gotta. And I went, well, I can just fly. Can I just go there now? No, you gotta wait until it tells you to. You know. And so, but I like the old round dials and stuff. It's my history. So.
Any scary encounters like up in the air? Like any kind of.
I've had three things happen.
What?
The first one was I was flying with a director. He's a producer now, Rob Bowman, mm-hmm. who did the X-Files. Did the X-Files movie and Reign of Fire and all that. And when he was working on our show, he was directing our show, he wanted to go fly. And so we said, we're going to go up to Santa Barbara and have dinner. And so I took off from Van Nuys, and the nose gear, I won't bore you with the details, but the nose gear wouldn't come down once it retracted.
Oh, shit.
And so we flew around, burned off fuel, and I came in and landed and on the mains, and then the nose came down and scraped and sparks were flying. And that was one.
Hey, let's get dinner.
Yeah. Well, actually, after that, we went to a bar. And
yeah.
seriously, within about 5 minutes, we were pretty well snockered. we said, just bring us as much tequila as you have.
Well, seriously, though, you saved that guy's life. I mean, you put him in danger, but then you saved his life.
Yeah. So he asked for it.
You should really call him that favor.
Like, well, actually, I did work on the Castle because he's one of the execs on Castle, but he did. We were talking. I think he directed another episode, and he said, "Michael, I've got to go back up because if you don't, I won't go back in small airplanes." And that's one.
Okay.
But then when I got the T-33, the trainer, this jet trainer, something was wrong with my airspeed indicator, and I came in and I thought I was going to a speed, and I wasn't. I was going much slower than I thought, and the airplane got about 20 feet over the runway and stalled.
Oh,
and
shit!
It hit the ground, and they had these big tanks, gas tanks on the wings, and they flexed down and hit the runway and ruptured.
Oh.
And I took off, and the tower called and said, "You have fuel coming out of your tanks."
Oh, shit.
So I came back around and landed, and the fuel drained out, and there were mechanics who actually worked on the airplane and put it together that were there at the airport up in Mojave. And I said, "So what do you think I should do?" And they said, "Well, the tanks are empty. You might as well go home." And so I flew home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Even with ruptured...
Well, no, the fuel was out. Yeah. The fuel was out of the tanks. And so you have tanks, and you have inboard tanks. And so I flew home on the inboard tanks. And that wasn't scary when it was happening, but on the way home, I kind of went, whoa, that could have been really bad.
I hope they looked at the airspeed indicator after this.
Yeah, yeah, and they thought I had just screwed up, but they found out that it was the airspeed indicator.
So which I hope you lorded over them.
Yes, we fixed that. And then the third time, which was my favorite.
Okay.
I was flying the F-86, and I was over Edwards, and I was doing aerobatics and doing all this stuff, and through a chain of events, there was no fuel. There were a chain of kind of events. And so I was going into Palmdale to do some approaches and stuff like that. And as I was flying near Edwards, the engine quits.
Oh, fuck.
And it's funny how, when airplanes or cars or anything like that, when they start screwing up really bad, they turn into women. Because I start going, "Oh, baby, please don't do this to me. Oh, sweetheart, I love you. I love you more than anything else. Just don't do this. Just take me home, And the engine quit. And luckily, I trained for all this stuff, and so I set up, and I felt like Chuck Yeager, because I was just cool, and I set up for the runway at Palmdale, and when I got over it, I put down the gear and flaps. I glided probably about 10 miles.
Oh, my God.
And I glided in and landed and had enough energy to pull off the runway, and the guys come out with the trucks, and they go, "What's wrong?" And I go, "Well, I ran out of gas." And they go, "Oh." And they said, "Hey! You're warm." And so I'm sitting there, "Hey, John, get your camera." And they got the camera, and we're taking pictures.
Hey, guys, Worf almost died right over our airstrip.
Yeah, so, but those were the three things that kind of, but.
But in general, you feel pretty safe up there.
I'm much safer than driving.
Well, it's three out of how many times have you flown? Like thousands.
I've had 15, almost 1,700 hours right now.
Wow.
And I've been flying since 1988. So, and those are three things. And the funny thing is that they were avoidable, but you just have to, you just have to kind of break that chain of events that happens. It's been fabulous now. But like I said, just one more series.
Yep.
I promise I'll let everybody alone if I get one more series.
Black House.
5 years, like House, and then, I think it would work. I think that would be good.
I think so too.
Yep.
I think we're going to have to make this happen.
Yep. Or, who's ever out there right now. Who listens to this anyway?
Heads of state, dignitaries, the like.
Yeah.
Obama?
Sure.
Probably. You know, it's really funny.
One of the people who helps book talent for the show sent me this email that was a rejection letter from the White House. She was like, she was like, I'm going to make this happen somehow. And it was like, thank you for your request to have President Obama on your podcast. I'm like, Ashley, come on.
Did she tell them that there's someone from the same town as him? Maybe that would have got him.
No, yeah, next time.
Yeah. You're from Kenya? I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
And wait a minute. What is he? Is he a...
He's a Hawaiian.
No. But he's a big fan of... He's a Star Trek fan.
He probably is a Star Trek
fan. He's a Star Trek fan.
All right, so we can get...
He's put up the Vulcan salute before.
Let's have pictures of that. Let's bring Michael back
like Superman.
When Obama comes on. We'll lure him in.
Dude, how awesome...
There's some things I'd like to talk to him about, too. Just a couple.
How awesome. I would love to see a Worf-bama. Like, Obama as Worf for Halloween would be fucking amazing.
I bet if we Google that, that's probably something that's...
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That's the one. Yeah, best last words thing about the internet.
This was an idea that someone already did. Cool. Well, is there anything else you want to promote while you're here?
No, actually, it worked well about the Castlevania because I'm sure the producers are going to be happy about that.
I'm happy to know that it's happening. And then the Kickstarter?
We hope that our fans will come out. We have, I think, 3 more weeks of it, and our fans will come out and support us, because I promised that this is a romantic comedy that we're going to film.
Cool.
And if this works, then I promise I'll write a science fiction show.
Cool.
So I'll reward them with a science fiction show. But it's a great deal. I think it's like I said, technology is amazing, and we'll see what happens.
Are you on the tweets at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Michael Dorn?
A.K.A. Worf.
Nice. I think what's helped is that we've had so many people from Next Gen on that Matt has become acclimated to it and hasn't really, didn't nerd out too much on this episode. And well, the fact that you guys already met.
Didn't nerd out at the
Attack of the Show.
He didn't nerd out then.
How are you keeping it together, man?
I'm a professional.
He's a professional. You know, actually, there was a guy, God rest his soul, just wonderful writer, who was working on According to Jim, and they invited me down to shadow, and I was going to direct the show, and the guy, the exec producer, says, Michael, now you got to be careful. Because I want you to watch out. There's a guy on our show who's a complete Star Trek guy. Complete. I mean, I'm telling you this because he may just embarrass us beyond all belief. And I went there, and I was there for like almost a month and a half or 2 months, and I never saw the guy. Never knew him. Like, there was producers, and nobody ever came up to me. And years later, this producer hired me to direct the show in New York, and he says, Michael, I'm the guy. And I went... You're kidding. He says, no, I just couldn't say anything.
Oh, that's...
So that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
He was hidden.
You expect guys, but, you know, the professional guys, they're cool about it, you know?
It's the first time I've ever been called a professional guy.
Professional guy.
Ever.
Don't get used to it.
I won't.
It's very professional.
Is there any Star Trek trivia you have to try to stump Matt? Can you stump him?
Like, he would remember.
He'll remember something.
There's one that I got stumped on. When I got the job, this lady I was seeing at the time, she and I were big fans of the original. And I don't know, but it does exist. But she stumped me because we'd do things, we'd try to stump each other with trivia. And she says, what are the words to the Star Trek theme, the original?
Beyond the rim of the stars.
I know that Roddenberry wrote words to the song.
Tenacious D performed them on our podcast.
Oh, I wasn't there that day. I was working here.
Tenacious D.
No kidding.
Yeah, and it was like, beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in starflight. Yeah.
But the brilliant thing was Roddenberry did that just to get royalties for the song.
It was genius.
Yeah.
It's genius, and they never... Totally. There were also lyrics to the Bewitched theme song.
Bewitched, you've got me.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Well, you know, you can't have a great show without a great theme.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
You're right.
Star Trek The Next Generation. Shun, here is a follow-up show to the other one.
There's a kid online that put up a video of him singing words to...
Damn it!
We actually had... whenever
fucking
whenever,
internet.
Whenever Patrick, you know, would go to the screen, we'd always hum the theme. I'm Patrick Stewart. I'm playing a bald guy in space and I hate you, Bernie. You know, we'd always have, you know, like, da, 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 da.
I'm Patrick Stewart. I've been knighted.
Do you have a favorite episode? Either Deep Space Nine or...
You know, Deep Space Nine. There were two. Soldiers of the Empire.
Oh, that is a good one.
And Once More Into the Breach.
Oh, Once More Into the Breach is really good.
Oh, my God. It's just... It is Shakespearean in scope, and it's... John Calicos is this guy who says, you know, I just want to die in battle. Can you help me? But he's lost it. I mean, he's gone crazy. And it is just, and he keeps it together enough to save everybody. I mean, it was just amazing. And this last line, he goes, he knocks me out and he goes, when I get to the halls of the hallowed dead, I will find your beloved and tell her that her husband is a noble warrior and loves only her or something. I went, oh my God. And then he gets in the transport and he goes, instead of going big, as he says, long live the Empire. And he beams out and he ship turns around and goes and fights the Jem'Hadar. Oh, it was just...
Once he shows up on DS9, season 4, like, gets really good.
It gets
really good.
Yeah.
Is that available on Netflix?
Yes, it is.
Use the code Jonah Ray.
It is available on Netflix. The entire... Well, I missed that one.
I said use the code Jonah Ray, and he goes, don't use that code.
No, the entire run of all of Star Trek, everything of Star Trek except for the movies is on Netflix.
Oh, it's just, but those were my two favorite. And Soldiers of the Empire was great, too.
Do you have a favorite Next Gen?
Huh?
Do you have a favorite Next Gen?
Yeah, the two of those were Data Builds the Child.
Oh, yeah.
The Offspring. And then one called The Drumhead.
Oh, The Drumhead's really good.
Which I like. It's a court, kind of a courtroom drama, but
down bigger was, men than you, Picard.
Gene Simmons, not... Kiss.
No.
But the actress, lovely. Gene Simmons, yeah. She was fabulous. Big Star Trek fan.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because I went up to her in the makeup trailer. I said, Ms. Simmons, hi. I'm Michael Dorn. She goes, I know who you are. And I went, oh.
Would you like to fly me up in your plane and pick up some vegetables from another part of the country?
Yeah, those two were my favorite.
Yeah.
My last question is, who have you met, like, celebrity-wise, that you were shocked and they came up to you and were like, oh, my God, I'm such a huge Star Trek fan? Can you think of anyone?
It was Gene Simmons.
It was Gene Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one. Actually, Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was on the show, and she really wanted to be on the show. And she was a big fan. But that was kind of like, cool. But Gene Simmons was the one because, you know, I mean, Gene Simmons, Spartacus.
If you can track it down on YouTube, there it might not be on there right now, but there's a comic relief thing they did, I think, during like the seventh season of Next Gen, where they find these artifacts in their comic relief t-shirt and a VHS, and they're in the observation lounge.
Oh, that's genius.
Yeah. And they say, comedians, Hoopi Goldberg. And
oh, I remember that.
Dorn goes, what is a Hoopi?
I know. Anyway, I did. Hoopi? What kind of name is Hoopi?
I remember that.
See, yeah. He dropped it in Octave of New War.
That's nice.
Yeah, so, that was
I sure hope she found that Nexus.
Nexus. God. No one hopes Nexus. They found that.
But it was
an orgasm ribbon floating through the cosmos? Why wouldn't you want that?
Another guy that I love was John Anderson.
Uh-huh.
The old couple of the survivors. I thought that was a good episode too. But he was great. He was great. And he was, once again, you see these actors and you see why they were stars and why they, you know, had long careers, because they were just so good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like interesting. Then they give them a speech and they just do the speech and you just go, oh, okay.
That's how you're supposed to do that.
It's just amazing.
Would you mind signing off the show by telling everyone to enjoy their burrito as Commander Worf?
Enjoy the burrito.
Yeah, enjoy your burrito.
you will enjoy your burrito, or I will be displeased.
Best sign off ever!
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.